get my shoes and out the door. 5, I'm alive. 6, 7, 8, feeling great. Hello, BYWG Tribe. This is Dr. Noah. We have a theme, our first theme for the June product of the month and book of the month, and that theme is longevity. Please keep in mind all the links, discount codes, and special offers for the product and book will be listed in the show notes in iTunes, in our weekly newsletter, and on our website at www.beyondyourwildestgenes.com at the Listen Now tab. Our book of the month is The Longevity Diet, featuring the 5-day fasting mimicking diet by Walter Longo, PhD. Our product company of the month is Prolon. Prolon is a 5-day program that nourishes your body while promoting regenerative and rejuvenating changes, including effects on a wide range of markers that contribute to aging, such as cholesterol, inflammation, and fasting glucose. In the month of June, on the Beyond Your Wildest Genes podcast, you can hear cardiologist Dr. Joel Kahn talk specifically about the longevity diet and Prolon's 5-day fasting mimicking diet.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Beyond Your Wildest Genes podcast. I am your host this week, Dr. Wanda Lee McPhee, and my guest today is Dr. Philip Maffetone. I hope I'm saying that right, Phil.
Sounds good.
Okay, good. Thanks. That's always a tricky one with people's names. And Phil is a private practitioner, health and athlete coach, a consultant, and a published researcher, as well as an author of a recent book, The Overfat Pandemic: Exposing the Problem and Its Simple Solution for Everyone Who Needs to Eliminate Excess Body Fat. I know that that certainly is a concern for a number of people that I deal with, and probably for a number of people listening as well. So thanks for joining me today, Phil.
Thank you, Wanda.
So as always, I like to start by letting everyone get to know you a little bit. Of course, I've had the pleasure of speaking to you already and having a look through all of the material, but maybe just to give people a sense of who they're listening to, can you tell us a little bit about who you are, where you came from, and maybe how you got into this field?
Gosh, that's a long story. When I was in undergraduate school, I stumbled on the word holistic. And I had been studying philosophy and that kind of stuff. And it just made sense. And when I became interested in health and fitness, it was the only way to approach it in a holistic way. So there was not, you know, you're going to be into exercise or you're going to be into food or dietary supplements. It was that you're going to be holistic. And that translates to working with patients or consulting with individuals as I'll help you help yourself. And it was, you know, when I first got into practice, which I'm no longer in practice, by the way, when I first got into practice, it was a tough sell to people. They would come see me because they had low back pain, or they were fatigued, or they were an injured athlete, and they wanted me to fix them. They wanted me to give them something, recommend a diet. I said, I don't have any diets. I don't have any off-the-shelf anything, but what I'll do is evaluate you and help you figure out how we could resolve this problem. And that's really been the theme of my career ever since.
So one thing that I came across when I was, you know, looking at information to talk about today was a recent paper that you wrote and had published in the Journal of Frontiers of Public Health. And, you know, this seems to be a pretty timely topic. We're talking about excess body fat, body weight, and it is very prevalent in the world, really. Our listeners come from all over the world, particularly in the United States, and I don't think Canada is very much behind anymore. So just how big an issue is it when we start looking at this overfat pandemic?
Well, big is the key word. In this particular paper that I wrote with my friend and colleague, Paul Larson, who is a Canadian over on the West Coast, we showed that 91% of American adults were overfat, 69% of children. And that's just frightening. It's not because being overfat is unsightly or we somehow have this emotional thing with it. Being overfat is a problem because excess body fat impairs our health and fitness in so many ways. Most important is that almost all chronic disease, cancer, heart disease, stroke, diabetes, Alzheimer's, and many, many very high percent of physical impairments, everything from low back pain to knee injuries to other disabilities, all come from, it's a trickle-down effect from excess body fat. And if we want to prevent chronic disease, prevent physical impairment as we age, we have to address the excess body fat if it exists, because that's treating the cause and not the symptom.
Absolutely. Now, overfat is an interesting word. You know, certainly clinically we use obese, or we've maybe heard a lot about overweight. Why the term overfat? This is pretty new.
Well, it's new on one level. I came across it, I want to say, around the time I got into practice, which was 1977. And I thought it made a lot of sense because there were people who were not overweight and did not have high BMI, so they weren't classified as obese, but they had excess body fat, as best as we could measure people back then. And so I used the term throughout my career. I've written a lot about it, and a few years ago I decided this terminology warrants a paper, which the paper a year or two before the one you just referenced from the Journal of Public Health, Frontiers in Public Health. We also submitted and had published a paper recommending the use of the term overfat to include people who are overweight, people who are obese, and people who are normal weight and non-obese but have excess body fat. And in most Western countries, if you look at all the people who are overweight and obese, another 20% are overfat. In countries like India, where we just published a paper on Indian adults, we found 80% of Indian adults were overfat. Half of them are normal weight, non-obese. So we're seeing the developing countries catching up to the Western world because they're adapting a lot of our bad habits.
Well, and that I think is one of the parts of this that I find the most interesting, because there are certainly in my clinical experience dealing with people, people who are not apparently overweight, and because they sort of get away with eating whatever they want or not exercising or whatever lifestyle sort of cheat that they've determined they prefer, they don't appear to be fat or appear to be obese or appear to be overweight, and yet they're extremely unhealthy, and their body fat percentage is significant, particularly around the internal organs.
Yeah, that's central, what used to be called central obesity or abdominal obesity, we now call abdominal overfat. It is the worst place to put fat because it affects our metabolism significantly, affects our cardiovascular system significantly. There's a real consensus on this body fat percentage issue. And when you get to about 15%, and in women, 29% or so body fat, you start seeing measurable abnormalities. You start seeing cardiovascular and metabolic abnormalities at those levels of body fat. But really the best thing that people can do is just measure their waist. People generally know how tall they are. Well, your waist should be less than half your height. And it doesn't get any simpler than that. If your waist is not less than half your height, your body fat is probably too high and something you need to work at as a primary health and fitness issue.
That's actually a really great tip because that is something that's really difficult for people who may not be sort of classically overweight in appearance, as they can't tell if they are in fact at risk for over fat. So your height in inches, I'm assuming.
However you want to
Okay,
measure it,
however
your
you want
height
to
in
measure it.
inches,
Yeah, and then your
it should
waist
be less than
less than half.
your waist should be less than half your height.
Perfect. All right. Well,
And
that's great.
people are so used to stepping on the scale, and I don't know whether it's they don't understand or they are just closing their eyes to it, that when you see that number on the scale, it doesn't tell you anything about fat. It tells you a lot about your water. But it's more a measure of lean body mass. And you could actually lose lean body mass and not lose fat, even gain fat, with the kinds of diets and exercise programs that are out there these days.
Absolutely. And certainly I hear it when patients complain to me that, I started going to the gym and I've gained weight. Well, they've gained muscle, which certainly is a good thing, but it's difficult when the scale is your only measure there and they don't take those inches into account. Yeah. So what is the solution? I mean, I know your book is promising a simple solution for people to start eliminating that excess body fat. So I bet we have some listeners who really want to know what to do now.
Well, that's the bottom line. So we generally know scientifically that there are, if we push aside the infections that cause disease, the environmental toxins, the genetic mutations, we're left with four primary lifestyle factors that contribute to the vast majority of chronic illness and physical impairments in our society. And they're alcohol, excess, tobacco, the first two. And we can kind of push those aside because people who smoke and get drunk too often know they have a problem and have to deal with it. The other two are exercise and diet. And I was going to say for years, but for decades, the powers that be, many doctors would emphasize exercise. But if you're exercising more, but you're not burning a lot of fat, you're not going to lose fat. And if you exercise every morning, but you go to work and sit at a desk all day, and then you sit on the couch all evening, you could be termed physically inactive by virtue of your energy expenditure. The fact that you worked out for 30 minutes or 60 minutes really doesn't put a dent in burning more fat calories or burning more calories, period. And we know that if the diet is not right, the exercise is not going to work as well. So we're left with diet as the main contributor to the overfat pandemic. And then I learned this early in practice, I would go through all these complex evaluations with patients because I'd have them do a diet analysis. And I would talk about carbohydrates and then get into proteins and talk about fats and on, and then just overwhelm them. And then they wouldn't do anything because they didn't know what to do. So one recommendation is really all we need for the moment for most people who have too much body fat, and that's to get rid of sugar. Getting rid of not just sugar, the added sugar and the sugar you put in your coffee, but the foods that turn to sugar very quickly, which is all the refined carbohydrates. That food is basically white sugar. And when you consume too much of it, and just about any amount is too much for people today, it raises insulin, it reduces fat burning, it causes maybe 50% of that carbohydrate to turn to fat and go into storage. So that's really, that should be for most people the main focus in getting rid of excess body fat.
I agree. That's certainly the conversation that we have with a lot of people is getting rid of the sugar. Not only does it turn to fat, but it limits your ability to break fat down as fuel because you're going to burn that cheap sugar that's floating around your system, and never tap into those fat sources.
Right. And you know that when you explain this to people, it's not a difficult concept to understand. And I think I've been watching this thing come and go over the years. It seems to be here to stay now, finally. But what people immediately want to bring up is, well, how much sugar can I eat, and still get rid of this body fat? Well, you can't have any. I'm sorry. You cannot have any. It's like a heroin addict saying, I'm just going to do heroin on Friday night and Sunday afternoon. Is that okay? No, it's not okay. It only takes a mouthful of sugar. That's how potent that stuff is to affect your metabolism.
And it's so addicting.
Well, it's the problem is that it is addicting, and people can't get off it. And I learned this the hard way early on in practice. Again, is in helping people wean off it, and weaning doesn't work. It has to be a cold turkey experience. And I developed something called the 2-week test, which I really developed so that people could experience what it's like to exist without that bad stuff in their system. What does it feel like to be without sugar and refined carbohydrates? And when people feel that, you can explain it all you want. You can say you're going to lose weight, lose fat, you're going to have a lot of energy, you're going to look 10 years younger, blah, blah, blah. But if they experience it, you usually get them hooked because they just know that, hey, this is what I want to feel like.
Absolutely. Now, the first question I usually get when we have this conversation with patients, is, what about fruit and vegetables? What about fruit? It's got sugar in it. Is that, do I have to avoid that too? What do you tell people?
I say that most people can tolerate fruits and vegetables. Some people can't because they're too carbohydrate intolerant. Part of that is this wave of genetic mutations that have hit our population. People sometimes are so sensitive, their insulin mechanism is so sensitive that eating an apple, that food that we think of when we think of health, is too much. It's too much natural sugar for that person because they're past the point where they can tolerate that. Likewise for other of the high, basically with fruits, it's pineapple, grapes, of course dried fruit, and watermelon are the big ones, and the other potatoes, and corn are the big problems for many people as well. So during the 2-week test, I don't let people have any of those foods, especially fruit juice, which is something best avoided by everyone. So it comes down to your level of carbohydrate intolerance. And again, I'll help you figure it out. There's a lot of guidelines that we offer people, and it's really quite easy because when you get to the point where you've gotten rid of the sugar, all that refined carbohydrate, you're now much more sensitive. You're now more intuitive or instinctual, I should say, about what happens when you eat something or what happens when you start to eat something. And, all animals on earth know how to eat, maybe not cats and dogs, but humans don't know how to do that anymore. So we need to get that, we need to use our brain more. When we start eating something that's not good for us, we should know that right away.
Absolutely. Now, your sort of clinical side of this, your coaching side of this, is around the MAF method, maximum aerobic function. So you look a lot at the nutrition, obviously, and at the exercise, and at the component of stress, which is maybe a little different than what a lot of sort of fitness and nutrition people focus on. How does that fold in?
Well, MAF stands for maximum aerobic function, and it's important because the aerobic system is a system that has been neglected. When I was a student, I didn't learn anything about the aerobic system. It just wasn't part of biology. It wasn't part of physiology. And it's really sad because that system is comprised of a lot of important components, especially components related to cardiovascular health. But the aerobic muscle fibers are important because they keep us together physically. They are very important for postural control, for gait. They help control our joints so they move correctly. And the aerobic muscles also burn fat for energy. When we talk about burning off excess body fat, it's the aerobic muscles that do that. And so the idea of maximizing the aerobic system from a physical standpoint, biochemical standpoint, and a mental, emotional standpoint is very important. And the concepts, when I learned about stress, and the Hans Selye, who first researched about stress back in the early part of the 1900s, the discussion was always around physical stress, biochemical stress, and mental, emotional stress. And somehow in our society, and this is true all over the world, I've seen it in developing countries and just all over, people have kind of locked into this idea that stress is a mental, emotional thing. Well, it is, but it's also biochemical. Excess body fat is an example of a huge stress. It's a physical stress and a biochemical stress. So the stress game is one of being aware of what stress is. It's physical, it's biochemical, and it's mental, emotional. And the second thing is to understand that stress is cumulative. So if I have a couple of physical stresses, like wearing bad shoes, sitting all day, having dental problems, if I have a couple of biochemical stresses, I eat some refined carbohydrates on a regular basis, drink too much coffee, and then the usual mental emotional stresses that everybody knows about. That's a lot of stress on the body, and it impairs our system. It impairs our brain from our brain down. It impairs our health and fitness in a very significant way.
Absolutely. So, there's probably no way to get rid of all stresses, and certainly some of those are unavoidable, but by getting rid of as many as you can control, it just sort of minimizes the number of things that go into that stress bucket.
Exactly. And what I like to have people do is make three lists of stress and spend a few days doing this because you won't think of them at all at one time. Have a physical list, have a biochemical list, and a mental emotional list, and make write down all of your stresses and then prioritize them, and then now you could see them. They're sitting right in front of you on your screen or on a piece of paper. And you can say, okay, I'm going to get rid of these two right away because I can just get rid of them right away. I'm not going to wear those shoes anymore. Or I'm going to stand up often at my job. Or I'm going to get a standing work desk. And then these other ones are going to take a little bit of time. And so that's a very good approach to take for stress.
Perfect. So I know that there's a lot more that we could talk about, but we're going to run out of time here in a few minutes. Do you want to just share your website with people? So if they want to find out some more, they can certainly do some digging on there.
Sure, it's philmaffetone.com, and I've written a lot of books. When you get to 20, you're allowed to stop keeping track. But the website has lots of articles that are all free. There's an app that you could do, which will guide you. What I always wanted to do when I first heard about apps was develop one that did what I did in my office with patients. And I took them through a process of assessment. Let's figure out what your problems are. And that's now called the MAF app. And so you'll see that on the website, and that's free as well. So philmaffetone.com is the website.
Perfect. We'll include that in the show notes so anybody who is listening to this while they're driving doesn't have to worry about pulling over. We will
That's a strength.
we'll make sure that's in there, as well as some links to the website and to your books and things like that, so that they'll be easy to find. So with our final few minutes, any parting thoughts or messages that you'd like to leave with our listeners so they can kind of gel with this?
Yeah, the same one that I have been using for so many years. Take charge of your health, please. You're in charge. You don't you don't have to rely on any profession or any practitioner or anyone. You want to get them to help you. Quite often we need help from other professionals, but we're in charge of our health. And the problem has been people have let go of that, and they're kind of at the mercy of too many things that are not helping them. It's an individual issue. Everybody's different, and only you can really take charge.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you, Dr. Philip Maffetone, for joining me today on Beyond Your Wildest Genes podcast. I really appreciate your time and your wisdom and sharing with our tribe. So I hope that you'll continue to do this very important work, and I look forward to reading more about it as time goes on.
Thank you, Wanderlei. It's been great.
Oh, you're very welcome. And thanks everyone for joining us. As always, we invite you to share this free podcast with others so that you can join us in creating a healthier community worldwide. So just check out the website www.beyondyourwildestgenes.com for this podcast, as well as past podcasts and more learning opportunities that we have to offer. So thanks everyone for joining us, and we look forward to talking again in the future. Bye bye.
Four, get my shoes and out the door. Five, I'm alive. Six, seven, eight.